Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
This is Radio Boston. I'm Sasha Pfeiffer, in for Meghna Chakrabarty. The Obama administration's race to the top contest dangled billions of dollars to encourage states to embrace education reform. Massachusetts adopted controversial federal standards to try to win a share of that money, and that gamble paid off yesterday when the Bay State was awarded a massive $250 million grant. Now school districts across the state are figuring out what they have to do to qualify for their piece of that pie and what strings might come attached to that money. Listeners, especially if you're parents, what do your kids' schools need to be different and to be better? If you could spend this money any way you want, how would you spend it? Teachers, what are you worried about? Do you think you should only be able to keep your job based on your kids' test scores? And how are you going to feel if getting this money means you have to work a longer day? Give us a call at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Joining me now in the studio is Jill Norton. She's the executive director of the Rennie Center for Education Research and Policy in Cambridge. Welcome to Radio Boston, Jill.
Thanks for having me.
Also joining us is Christina Porter. She teaches English and literacy at Revere High School. She's also a member of the Massachusetts Teachers Association. That's a union that supported the state's bid for these Race to the Top funds. Welcome to you too, Christina.
Thank you for having me.
So, Jill Norton, let's start with you. What are the feds trying to accomplish by flooding Massachusetts with this amount of money?
Well, I think initially the idea behind Race to the Top was that the feds wanted to first find out about and then highlight folks who were doing good things for kids, and to kind of have some proof points. And they've done a really unique thing in focusing on some very targeted areas of reform that obviously the administration believes are going to have an impact on
some of these being controversial things?
Like some of them are controversial things, absolutely. And I think, you know, for sure the lifting of the charter school cap is a clear indication that the administration thinks that more autonomy and innovation is going to come through charter schools. So that's absolutely been a controversial one, not just in Massachusetts, but across the nation.
And then, of course, there are things that really have some teachers howling, like we're going to link your pay to test scores.
Sure.
You know, we're going to ask you to work a longer day. Are these some of the things that the federal government
absolutely.
Is targeting?
So you just nailed it. Those are two of the things that have been the most controversial about this grant program is the charter schools and then the linking teacher performance with student outcomes and how do you do that.
So just 6 months ago, Massachusetts did not win any money in the first round of this contest. Now suddenly 6 months later, we got a huge amount of money. So we had to make some concessions to do that. We had to agree to adopt some federal standards. That has people wondering if there are going to be some strings attached to this money. They're going to make people uncomfortable.
Yeah, I think, I mean, I would say that Massachusetts stands out in the pool of states that that applied for this money in that it officials have been saying all along and have been very clear that this isn't something that they want to do to the field, but with the field. And Massachusetts has strong voices from teachers unions.
Very strong.
Yes. And some of the other states do not. And so I think Massachusetts is taking, from my perspective, a very effective approach in kind of moving forward, trying to gather as much input and voices from teachers as possible.
What would you say teachers are most worried about related to this money?
I think it's primarily this issue of how are they going to be evaluated based on student outcomes, and will that be fair? And will it be, you know, will it be a growth model? Will I be held accountable for only the progress that I make with my students in the course of the year? So the things I have control over, will I be held accountable for that, or will it be sort of just a standardized test that takes into account, you know, wherever the student is and may or may not have any reflection of what I had to do with those students.
Listeners, how do you feel about that? You could soon have a school, if you have kids in school, where the teachers are evaluated based on your kids' test scores, where their pay could be linked to test scores, where there could be a lot of things that change the way your school looks. Tell us what you think. Is that a good thing? Would you like to see the money spent that way? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. We also have Christina Porter, who teaches English and literacy at Revere High School. And Christina, your union actually supported this, even though this could quite change the way your school day looks. So are you supportive as well of the changes that might come with agreeing to, with getting some of this money?
Well, I have mixed feelings about it. There are things that I really like, and there are things that I'm very concerned about. Talking about the test scores, I think immediately of some of my colleagues. I'm an English teacher, so I teach a tested subject. There you go. So what about
a tested meaning the MCAS?
Yes. The MCAS test. What about teachers that teach art, music? I'm just afraid that it's going to create some kind of role that the English and the math teacher at the high school level are very important because they teach an MCAS subject, whereas my colleagues are not as important as we are, and that's just not fair. So I'm concerned about how fair that's going to be.
Could there, you make it sound like it could be an advantage for those teachers, mm-hmm. English and math, but could it also put them at greater risk because there are clear test scores that reflect how their students are doing, whereas if you teach art, it's a little more fuzzy about how your performance is.
Right, and there's so much that goes on in a classroom that can't be measured by a standardized test. And I know where we work, we have such a high rate of transients among our students, so I may get a student that comes in January, and then they're going to take the MCAS test in March. So I've only had them for a month or two, but yet I'm held accountable to whatever score they receive on that test. So I'm just hoping that standardized test is not the only way that you evaluate who is and who is not an effective teacher.
We have a caller who has a thought about, judging teachers based on children's performance, so I think we should hear from him. This is Todd from Hingham. Todd, thank you for calling Radio Boston.
Sure. How are you doing?
I'm good.
Yeah, I have a child just going to second grade. Her first year was spent at a private Montessori school. And this is where we live at Hingham, and Hingham has a pretty good school system, so we're putting her in the public school system. I grew up in Hingham. But, even in first grade, coming out of Montessori school, she's way ahead of everyone else in the tests. So to me, maybe a small class size and, like I said, keeping judging the teacher. We do this in private industry. Teacher performance based on outcome of the student's performance. I think I strongly agree with that.
So you like that idea of a more corporate model being applied to the classroom?
Well, yeah. I mean, my mother-in-law is a teacher, and, the different schools in Hingham are rated differently, and some people avoid, but yet your teachers get the same paycheck no matter where they teach. And clearly, some schools, even inside of Hingham, are better than the others. So why is that? I think paying based on performance and longer hours, I think, are necessary.
Right.
I'm anxious putting my child into a public school when she has such a great education in the private side with Montessori.
Todd, thanks for that. I appreciate that. He makes an interesting point, which is that right now teachers are largely paid on a lockstep scale. With this new money, it could dramatically change the way teachers are paid. We have another call from a Mary from Andover, who's a high school teacher. Hi, Mary, and welcome. Thanks for calling Radio Boston.
Thanks for taking my call. I was interested in your last caller. In many ways, I understand what he's saying, and that teachers are sort of paid evenly across the board based on the number of years they have, and yet we know that there are teachers who invest untold amount of time and their own money in improving their knowledge base, expanding it, constantly keeping current with new research in education and learning. And those teachers certainly do deserve to be rewarded. And then there are those who, sadly, and I believe they're the minority, who kind of phone it in every day. So I think this could be an opportunity for us to think about how are we evaluating teachers. But again, you have to think about a variety of different things. I think how students are performing in your class is a component, but there are other things. How have you prepared for your classes? What have you done over the course of the year to improve your knowledge base, to try new strategies with old lessons? But that requires additional work on the part of administrators. And so I think that if we're going to look at teachers differently, we also need to look at administrators differently. And who's actually coming in to watch me? Is it an assistant principal who hasn't been in a classroom in 15 years? Or is it someone who's a master teacher who has been teaching, who's a really quality teacher? So this could be a great opportunity. And as for teachers teaching longer hours, personally, I don't have a problem with extending the school day or the school year. But like any other profession, if you want me to work more, you're probably going to have to pay me more. I don't know.
and you might get more pay if your contract change based on this money. Mary, thank you for making those interesting and important points. We're talking about the $250 million that Massachusetts was awarded yesterday in Race to the Top, a national education competition, and how this could change school districts and the strings that might be attached to that money. we have here Christina Porter, who teaches English and literacy at Revere High School. Christina, can you comment on the what Mary from Barry just said? You know, she talked about the intangibles of teaching. It's not just all about test scores. What about that?
No, it's not just all about test scores. And I was nodding my head furiously. I know you can't see me because we're on the radio, Mary, but absolutely. Something that she said that had me nodding my head so furiously was who is going to be coming in and evaluating you. Jill and I were actually having a conversation outside of the studio before we came in. I was saying that there are people who are administrators who maybe were not the most effective classroom teachers and are now coming in to do evaluations, or maybe were never classroom teachers. So I said to Jill, I would not go in and evaluate a lawyer or a doctor because I'm not one, but yet people come in to evaluate teachers who may not have classroom expertise themselves.
Interesting. And Jill Norton of the Rennie Center, you were nodding too during that call, in which the caller talked about both the intangibles of teaching and the fact that how are we grading our administrators?
That's right. Well, I think that's an important point to raise, and it's actually something that's addressed in the Race to the Top application. So it'll just come down to implementation now. But it's both evaluating teachers every year, but also evaluating principals every year, and making sure there are some clear criteria for evaluating principals as well as teachers.
We have a caller, Lori from Hingham, who has a thought about this as well. Lori, hi, and thank you for calling.
Hi, yes, thanks for taking my call. Just a couple things. I just wanted to say that I don't agree with the idea of kind of using a corporate model for managing schools, because I don't think children are products. And so therefore, I really think that focusing on efficiency and how do you make everything equal, it doesn't work, because children are all individuals, teachers are all individuals. I'm really worried about teachers' pay or any kind of advancement being linked to test scores. I think we're already seeing a lot of my friends, other parents are noticing how the quality of the instruction of our kids is going down as the focus on testing is increased. And I just shudder to think if teachers are further stressed out with how the tests, the scores of their children come out each year. Already they're having to cover so many different topics really, really lightly and thinly without any substance in order to get everything covered for the test. And then countless times have I heard teachers say they're throwing out cool projects they used to do with children, all sorts of creative type of things they would do with them. They don't have the time anymore. It's impossible to get anything in there other than instruction for testing, testing, testing. I can't imagine if we were going to further pressure them. Testing is like really kind of an inferior way to standardized testing. It's an inferior way really to evaluate how a child's doing.
Right. Laura, you make a fair point. You know, testing has its flaws as well, and schools aren't exactly companies. We have a lot of callers, so let me go to Joan from Duxbury, who's a teacher, and I think we should hear this teaching view as well. Hi, Joan.
Hi. Well, I've liked a lot of what I've heard people say. I don't have a problem with having there be some link to my pay based on how well my students do. I think as long as it's based on their production over that year. I would hate to see any kids be the students that somebody doesn't want in their classroom because they don't want to have students who don't test well. That's not a great situation for children. But I do think, just like everybody else in the world, we have to be effective at what we do, and I think it's a motivator, as long as a lot of other things are taken into account. The kind of training we go through, you know, like somebody had said, additional training and all those things that help us to be good teachers. I think it has to be a lot of things we look at, but how kids test score is important, and so I don't have a problem with that at all. I also like the thought of getting more time of principals and assistant principals coming into my classroom, both for formal visitations of stuff we've written up, of lesson plans, but also just popping in, because I think that's when you really see what a teacher's
right,
doing.
When you don't know the evaluation's coming. Mm-hmm. Exactly. If you know, you can sort of put on your best game. Joan, thank you for that. Jill Norton of the Rennie Center. Joan raises the issue of sometimes the type of students you have actually has an influence on how they may test. And I wonder if each of you actually, both Jill Norton of the Rennie Center and Christina Porter, who's a teacher at Revere High School, what about school districts with a lot of low-income students? And I assume Revere is one of these. You know, many of these students, in order for them to succeed educationally, they need other kinds of services, like social services that the teachers can't provide. Jill, do you want to take that first? How does the money address that issue at all?
I think it does. I think there are some areas in here that Massachusetts in particular has really tried to get at the additional supports. And then outside of the Race to the Top application, I think the state is beginning to work on these kind of health and human services types of supports for students that are not necessarily the purview of schools traditionally, but that we all know need to happen in order for students to learn. But I think there is this concern that we wouldn't want to provide a disincentive for teachers to go into the under-resourced schools and to teach students who are low income and whose scores may be lower.
Jill Norton, thank you for that. We only have a tiny bit of time, but Christina, do you want to comment on that? What about the low-income kids in schools where maybe just, you know, education reform isn't enough?
No, it's not enough. These kids have multiple needs that they have that can't be covered in the school day. And my hope is that this money can help them.
Great. Thank you very much. Christina Porter is an English and literacy teacher at Revere High School. And Jill Norton is executive director of the Rennie Center for Education Research and Policy in Cambridge. They were talking about the $250 million in Race to the Top money that Massachusetts got yesterday. Thank you to both of you for coming in.
Thanks you.
Very much.
It's time for a quick break. But when we come back, the incoming CEO of the state's largest health insurance company says he's all about saving money, even when it comes to setting his own salary.
I am extraordinarily sensitive to the public perception and experience of high executive salaries. We will take that sensitivity into account, and I think you're likely to see slightly different numbers than you've seen in the past.
I'm Sasha Pfeiffer. This is Radio Boston. We'll be right back.